My name is Willie Bolander. I study influence, persuasion, and leadership in selling and sales management, and I teach people how to sell. In this podcast, we'll talk to some of the world's top sales leaders and see what we can learn from them. Welcome to the Sales Lab.
Welcome to the Sales Lab. We are here with David Stern from Acme Brick. And David, I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from, where you're at now, the whole journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me, Willie. I appreciate the opportunity. So I started out, and don't hold this against me, I started out at Texas Tech.
What are you going to do?
Right? I'm a Texas Tech engineering graduate in structural engineering. And when I was in school, that's what I was focused on, and that's what I thought I would make my career in. I come from a long line of engineers, but I've always had a more entrepreneurial bent than most engineers. And, you know, once I got out of school, I went to work for a company called Fluor. It used to be called Fluor Daniel. We did overseas projects. We were all over the world building things. So it was exciting in that sense. However, the day-to-day monotony of the engineering and doing calculations and doing drawings just wasn't what I wanted to continue doing. So in 2003, I started putting my resume out for sales jobs. I had no sales experience. I didn't have a wonderful program like you offer at Texas A&M. We had industrial engineering at Texas Tech, and that's about as close as it came. But you know, of course, I did structural, so it was a different curriculum altogether. But you know, coming out of that, I ended up with Acme Brick in 2003, and I remember being interviewed. He said, "Have you done sales?" I said, "Absolutely, I can totally do this." So I was big about faking it till I made it, and I was with Acme Brick for 9 years as a frontline sales guy. I was calling on architects. I was calling on contractors. Really enjoyed the freedom of it. I enjoyed the compensation was very good. Acme Brick is a great company to work for. I really love my time here. But in 2012, I left Acme Brick and I partnered with two other gentlemen and we ran a startup company. So if any of your students ever think about running a startup, be very careful. Be very sure you're ready to give the rest of your life up. So for about 5 years, I worked on that company. We took it from a garage in San Antonio where we were making product and developing patents. And we built an $8 million manufacturing plant. We started making building materials. And through various venture capital, getting involved and financial reasons, I ended up leaving and coming back to Acme Brick in 2016. So I've had two stints with Acme Brick, both of 9 years right now. So when I came back as the commercial sales team manager. And that's how I arrived here, today.
This content is brought to you by the TIE Sales Showdown. That's the Technical, Industrial, and Engineering Student Sales Showdown, hosted right here at Texas A&M University. We have over 200 engineering students taking sales classes every semester and a growing minor program in technical sales. These students are smart enough for STEM and savvy enough for sales, and the TIE Showdown allows them to demonstrate their selling skills in a role-play competition where industry partners, like you, serve as judges and provide them coaching feedback. If you're hiring for technical, industrial, or engineering sales roles anytime in the next couple of years, this is an event you can't miss. You can learn more at tx.ag/ties. That's tx.ag/TIES. Hope you can join us.
Students always crack me up when they say, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be my own boss. And so, when you say be your own boss, it sends a shiver down my spine, that like, have you thought through exactly what that means? Or whether that's even the right motivation, a lot of people want to be their own boss. Do you want to work 90 hours a week?
Exactly.
Do you want to be the janitor and the CEO? Do you, I want to be my own boss. I don't know. It's like saying I like beautiful women or something. Like, well, right. Sure. But like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah,
it's true, I guess. Yeah, we want to be our own boss.
Yeah, and find a company where you can be your own boss. I think that that is a powerful message I would send. That's what I tell my kids. You know, if you want to go out and be a true entrepreneur, just know what you're signing up for.
Yep.
And be ready for that and make sure your family is ready for that. And they're not going to see you very much. And you're going to be obsessed with it or it's not going to work.
No.
So I think for me personally, it was a great experience. It was around that time I was going to go back and get my MBA. And I did this instead. And I feel like I maybe got more benefit than getting an MBA. I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about the pitfalls of running your own business and the benefits of working for a, you know, big company like Acme Brick. It's a trade-off, but you know, I think it's, for me, was the right decision.
Well, sales roles can kind of represent this sweet spot between full-blown entrepreneur and, you know, regular employee with a capped salary, right? Yeah, I get to build the business. I get to do the exciting stuff, but I don't have to worry about HR compliance or, you know, all of these other things.
Payroll or, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I can talk a little bit about Acme Brick. I don't know how much your students know about that.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about Acme Brick and the different sales roles that exist there in the company and what's technical about it and all of that. Yeah,
absolutely. So Acme Brick, we were founded in 1891. So we're, you know, one of the oldest companies still in existence. We've changed hands a couple times over the years. And right now we're owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So we answer to Warren Buffett and his folks, but they're very hands-off. So they buy a business and they expect you to produce a return and they set those bars very high, but they also allow our team to run our business because they know they don't know brick and building materials like we do. So, you know, after 134 years, we should be able to do that. So one part of our business is direct selling. So we manufacture our own products. We have 15 brick plants. 7 of those are in Texas. So we're a very Texas-centric company. Our headquarters is in Fort Worth. And we also distribute brick nationwide for 8 or 10 other companies within the brick sphere. We also sell cladding, stone, flooring. We're really a building materials supplier.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because you had said brick and building materials. So those are the types of building materials, non-brick.
When I started in 2003, we were 95% brick and stone. That's what we sold. And that was our business. We kind of stuck to it. Now, brick is only about 60% of our business. So the other 40% are, you know, advanced engineered cladding systems, you know, things that require a lot more technical expertise. And we have a technical team that sort of backs up, a technical team of engineers that backs up the sales team. So, you know, within our company, you know, I head up the commercial sales part for my territory. And that includes anything that's not a single family home. So okay. We have separate sales reps that deal with single family homes and those builders. It's a huge part of our business. That's probably a whole nother podcast. We could talk about that, but it's just a little different. What we do is we have architectural reps. Their job is to go call on architects and get our product specified on those jobs. We also have contractor reps. Their job is to go out to general contractors, subcontractors. These are our end customers. These are the guys and gals who buy our material. So the roles are a bit different. We have some hybrid reps that do both, but typically it's one or the other because it's just so different. On the side architecturally, I like to tell people for Acme Brick, and this is really a lot of building materials companies, we're more on a pharmaceutical sales model. I create that parallel where, you know, a pharmaceutical company, they go to a doctor and the doctor writes prescriptions to patients. Well, the doctor doesn't buy anything from the pharmaceutical company, but that's who the pharma reps call on, right? So the architects never buy anything from us, but that is who we spend an inordinate amount of time with building relationships and getting specified. So when they put us in what's called the spec, that's the documentation surrounding any project that they're building. They call out our materials in there as our goal. And when they call out our materials, that's just like a doctor writing a prescription. Then the contractors grab that specification, just like your doctor would hand you a prescription, and they go to us to buy the material. And we have to be aware of different things with architects than we do with contractors. Contractors are very price driven and risk averse. Architects are very creative. So we've got to, our job is to really mesh those two worlds within our team and make sure we're building those relationships.
I see. Okay. And so I think it'd be very easy for somebody to see the name of the company, Acme Brick, and think, okay, so somebody who needs bricks orders bricks from you. Pretty simple. Doesn't sound very technical, but what I'm hearing is that you're sort of co-creating these projects, maybe with the architects, with the people designing them. And how much technical expertise does the sales rep specifically need to have compared to this other group of tech support that you mentioned earlier?
Right. Absolutely. So we don't hire people based on just their technical knowledge or their technical aptitude. Okay. So we're not out just looking for engineers to hire because frankly, most engineers are not great salespeople. They're numbers driven. They're very task focused. I worked with them for a long time. I know. So what we do is my rule of thumb is my reps need to know more about everything we sell than the architects do. So we're going to try to get that architect to write their prescription for our material, in essence, with the specification. They need to know more about that. Architects are creative people, but an architect, even they'll tell you there are some real sub-level experts among the architects, but they're really a jack of all trades. They're designing a building. They've got to figure out the HVAC system, the security layout, the doors, the door handles, the how the toilets work, all this. We're one part of that. We sell, the covering on the outside of the building and some interior materials as well. But we have to know more about that product than they do. We have to know more about brick than an architect does. We have to know more about stone. And I really drive that home with my team. So they don't have to be an engineer. We have those on staff for when things get really detailed and we pull those guys in and as needed with certain products. But we sell everything from your basic brick that have been installed for 10,000 years to a fully engineered wall system that has very precise attachment points, very, very tight tolerances and specifications. And we have to be able to handle all that.
Now, can I ask you what are some of the core value propositions that you're bringing to the table? Why does somebody say, yep, I got to go with Acme and nobody else?
Well, we're there, like most technical sales operations, we're there to bring solutions. So we're there to bring solutions to the architectural community and the contractors too, because oftentimes they'll get into a bind and brick may seem basic, but there are a lot of things that can be done wrong that can jeopardize the quality of your finished project. And we're there to help everybody avoid those problems. We're there to help everybody stay in budget. I think of our salespeople as consultants. Okay. So we have one of the cool things I like about this industry, having been a rep for a long time and now managing, we have a very finite customer base. So they're not creating new architecture firms every day. They're not creating general contractors every day. There's huge barriers to entry to both of those things. You can't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to go be an architect this afternoon. We establish relationships with those people. And the way I kind of coach new reps to do that is really just a basic four-step process. And I can tell you a little bit about how I look for the right people, but the four-step process is they have to plan. Okay. You have to plan because it's very easy when you're an outside sales rep to get handed a stack of brochures and think, okay, I'm just going to go drop brochures off all day. That's not what we do at all. There are people who try to do that, but they're generally not going to be successful. So you got to plan. You have to show up in person. That's a big deal with a finite customer base where we are locked in. We manage via a geographic territory. So for example, my territory goes all the way to the Louisiana border. It goes out past College Station, Galveston, it's all of Houston. And so big circle there, but you can show up in person in that territory.
Yeah.
And I emphasize that, and especially now with younger reps, they're used to online interactions. They're used to social media interactions. They're used to texting. They're used to phone calls, and that's all great. You have to do all that. But when you show up in person, that's important. When you get there, you have to listen. So training people with really active personalities who want to be, you know, people who want to be the life of the party all the time, you really have to train them to slow down, yep. Listen to what your customer needs. You don't know what they need till they tell you. And there are ways to coax that out of them, but you've got to listen. And then the very last, the last most important step is you have to bring solutions. So you have to be able to digest what they tell you, know our product line inside and out, and bring a solution that makes their life easier. You know, it's, I'm a big fan of Zig Ziglar. I watch his old tapes and listen to his stuff, and his famous saying, you know, you can get everything in life you want if you'll just help enough people get what they want. And so that's sort of our core philosophy with the architects, because if we come in and we bring them a solution that they hadn't thought of, that establishes, you know, that can establish a lifelong relationship with these people. I've got people I started calling on in 2003 that I'm still friends with today. They still call me if they get in a bind on some aspect of building material. And that's what we want. You know, we coach that we want long-term reps. We want people to go that extra mile to develop that. So I think that's a long way of answering, you know, a basic thing. Plan, show up in person, listen, and bring a solution.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, you mentioned, you know, helping them avoid problems they might run into. Can you give us an idea of what types of problems somebody might be running into that you would help them avoid?
Absolutely. So, you know, one example that we see commonly is project budgets. You know, these architects are very creative people. They want the latest, newest, the, you know, something that looks like nobody else has. Well, sometimes that costs two or three times what a normal product is going to cost you. And they tend to gravitate towards those items. And we just have to listen and establish early, have conversations with them about, well, what is the budget for your project? The budget for, you know, the budget for building, you know, for the U of H football stadium, which we did, is different than the budget for a gas station. Right? You're not going to have the same level of product on those, and you have to know how to sell to your customer. So those are things that we do to avoid problems later on. Because the worst thing, there are very few things that an architect hates more than when they write that specification, that prescription for us, it goes out to market and their budget gets completely blown. And it's because of that product. So we have to be very upfront with that. We work with them as, when I was a sales rep, I always thought of myself as part of their project team. I told the big firms, my biggest customers, I said, I'm a free employee for you. You know, I'm a structural engineer. I have my PE license. I don't use that anymore, but I'll bring all expertise I have with construction and help you look over your project and just suggest things. And we have to do it softly. You know, because they don't want us to come in and act like we're designing the building either. So there's a very fine line there. But, you know, that's an example of how we help them. When they call us and they're in a bind on a project, maybe they didn't specify our product. It happens, right? And they're in a bind on budget. And they said, David, here's my budget. What can you do to help me? Or they talk to the rep and they come up with a solution that allows them to continue the project. So those are just a couple of examples of things that we run into on a daily basis.
Well, and so in that scenario, it sounds like a solution would be a more cost-effective material to complete the project. What other forms does do the solutions come in?
Well, we have, you know, outside of brick, we're always exploring as a company. I don't take credit for this. We have a team of folks that are extremely good at doing this. We're always seeking out new products. And that's one thing I love about working at Acme Brick. So we're always expanding our product line. We've expanded into exterior cladding systems. I tell people we basically sell everything you see on the outside of a building except windows and roofing at this point. And one day we might sell that. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we're able to develop those extra project solutions. We bring products to architects that they've never seen before. So that adds value to our company. We're not just a guy trotting in there with a box full of brick and that's all we've got. You know, when I started my career, that was kind of what we did. We had a wide selection of brick, but that's what we brought them. If they said, well, what about a slate cladding or what about a metal panel system? I'd say, well, you're going to have to call somebody else because I don't have anything like that. So now we do, and it helps us actually as a company to leverage our sales team to the best that we can. Because, you know, if you've got a rep that you're paying for, paying good money, paying good commissions, you want them going and selling as many different types of products as possible. And the rep wants to do that. You know, we'll have reps now. Our typical commercial rep is probably less than 50% brick at this point. And they're over 50% on our cladding systems, just dollar for dollar, because they're more expensive. But it's not unusual for us to start working a job and it will take 3 years to come to fruition. So we'll start on the beginning design phase of something with a higher end product. We facilitate engineering drawings. We facilitate specific shop drawings for different products. We offer the whole solution. We don't ever point to someone else to provide that. We provide that. And that's an Acme Brick philosophy that I really appreciate and love, because it lets us sell these great, exciting new products that architects haven't even seen yet.
Yeah. Now, when you're interacting and selling to an architect, is it typically, you know, we're using the phrase an architect, is it typically one person or is there a committee or are there different players involved?
There'll be different players involved. Their architecture firms are really structured on a team approach.
Yeah.
It's not typically, very rare. We have a couple of customers like this where it's just one guy and a computer and he's doing everything. That's extremely unusual. Most of these firms have, you know, 20 to 200 architects on staff, and they'll divide those into teams and they're working on a project team. So we'll cater to the whole team. We'll be there and we'll walk, you know, a typical rep that calls on architects will walk into a firm and that rep might be at that firm for 3 hours. That's not unusual, because you're going to go see team number one about a school they're working on. You're going to go see team number two about a church that they're building. You're going to go see team number three about a street paving project that we're working with them on. So we're very, very in tune with their teams, and we try to lock in with those as much as they'll allow us to do. And once we build those relationships by going in and showing up in person and listening to their needs and bringing solutions, they tend to embrace our reps. And those are the reps that become successful and make a lot of money, what everybody wants to do. And, you know, our company's successful that way.
In terms of somebody maybe starting a career and coming into a role like this, what should they be able to do? What should they bring to the table?
Well, when we hire people, I love hiring salespeople that are brand new. That may seem crazy. It may seem out there. I've hired experienced salespeople before. I don't care how good you were, where you sold, you're coming with some baggage. And I don't know if you learned good things at your previous location or bad things. So we do have some very successful reps that did that and came, and they're doing well. But I prefer bringing people in that don't have any sales experience, and they don't really have to have just an excellent aptitude for sales. What I really need and what I really look for is, are you gonna work all day, every day? You know, work ethic is huge for success in any type of sales, because you're given a lot of autonomy as a sales rep. So, you know, it's easy for a sales rep, and I've known new reps back when I was a new rep. I had counterparts that would, you know, show up at the office in the morning for an hour and then go fish the rest of the day, or go watch a movie, or go home and sit in sit on their couch. Those people are not going to be successful. And I tell new reps, I say, look, I can give you the formula to be successful. And there are details to it, but it's basically, look, plan, and stick to your plan and fill your day up. Use your entire day. You know, the rep that makes, I tell new folks this, the rep that makes 7 calls a day is going to blow the rep that makes 3 calls a day out of the water. It doesn't matter aptitude. The guy making 3 calls a day can be Mr. Personality. He can know all the products. He can just be Mr. Wonderful. But if you're making 7 calls a day and you've got a pretty good knowledge of the product and you're able to speak to people, you're going to blow their numbers out of the water. And that's shown time and time again over the last 20 plus years in this business. It's very true. And so I look for people with good work ethic. I look for young people who have a history of showing up and being successful at whatever they did. I don't care if it was just academic. We hire a lot of former college athletes. So that is a demographic that we really look for. And they really do excel, because I know that they've just spent 4 plus years balancing team practices, travel for games, and their schoolwork. So we have a lot of former athletes on staff, even guys who played in the NFL. We have several salespeople who became sales managers that went all that way. So that's what we look for. I really like character. That's huge for me, because, you know, character is what you do when nobody's watching. And a lot of times in an outside sales role, nobody's watching. They're not watching you that day, but they're going to see your numbers and they're going to know eventually what you're doing. So I think for young folks trying to get in the business, I love hiring young kids right out of school, but they've got to have that character. They've got to have that work ethic.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I think about this sometimes in terms of, you know, there's these two words that people like to use, effectiveness and efficiency. And I feel like I see people sometimes getting really intrigued by efficiency without realizing that it doesn't matter how cheaply or how cost effectively you get the wrong thing done. If it's not effective, you know, let's start there. You know, and you know, even students say, "Well, you know, I'm interested in work-life balance, and I'm interested in you know, working smart, not just working hard." And, yeah, but let's start with a heavy dose of hard work as well. Let's not imagine that we're so clever and so smart that we're going to be able to make easy work out of what for everybody before us has been pretty hard work. You know.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, you look for people who are maybe playing college sports. How would you assess things, or how else would you assess things like hard work, work ethic, and even character?
That's a lot of that comes down to, you know, for somebody just coming out of school, it's hard to assess. So you have to really look at a lot of people. So I feel like, in interviews, you know, when we hire someone, when I was initially hired, I was interviewed 3 different times by 3 different people. And I try to adopt the same philosophy. You know, I know there's a place for everybody. Everybody who comes to me with a resume has a job that they're going to be suited for. I just need to find out if they're suited for this job. And in order to do that, to fill one position, I need to see 50 resumes and I need to have 10 to 15 different people interview. And I need to ask them questions about, what do you do in your free time? You know, what's important to you? And those answers can be, you know, if somebody says, I only care about work-life balance and I want to collect a paycheck and I want to make, you know, I want to make the minimum that you're going to pay me to start out, and I'm great with that. Well, that's not what we're after, because we're looking to grow our business and we're looking to grow our company. I look for people that, you know, they've got some motivation to be better, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
they've either got family obligations, and I know this, you know, it's tough on people and all that. And I'm not looking for people to have tough situations, but I'm looking for people that, you know, if a guy comes to me, he just graduated college and he's got a kid on the way, I know that guy is, you know, I'm not recommending that pattern. Trust me. I have 5 kids myself. Several are out of college and they're, you know, you gotta do that right. But things like that, or they say, you know, I want to grow. I want to make a lot of money and I'm willing to work. You also have to get somebody who's willing to check their ego at the door. Cause I've had some new graduates or people that come to me maybe after one or two short gigs doing something else. And, you know, they have trouble doing that. You know, when I say, hey, this is what you need to do, you need to make 7 calls a day instead of 3 calls a day, they kind of just let that flow off their back and they say, well, I'm just going to sell a few big jobs and then I'm going to go sit on my couch. And that catches up with you. I mean, you can do that. And that's one of the cool things about being in sales and being technical sales. Look, if you've got your stuff together, you know, and there's one afternoon a month you want to go walk around the park all day, I don't care. But most every day you need to be planning that, and you need to be effective and be in person and be showing up.
Yeah. And
so they've got to show an ability to continue to learn, because as I mentioned before, we're bringing new products in all the time. There are some reps, you know, I've heard say, well, I'm just a dumb brick salesman. I've literally heard that come out of people's mouths, and really you can't be that.
Yeah.
And you certainly can't portray that to your customers. So, you know, people buy from people they trust. The architects write prescriptions for people they trust, and the contractors buy from people they trust. So our contractor rep role, which is even a little different, is, you know, equally as important to closing these deals.
Well, you know, this ego issue, I think coming back to the hiring former athletes idea, I mean, people right. always, when I talk to them about this issue, the, you know, when they say, yeah, we like former athletes, you know, say, oh, because they're competitive, because they're hardworking, all of these things. And I think, well, you know, the biggest thing from my perspective with that pool of candidates is that they can take feedback and not be injured by it. You know, does seem like a bit of a muscle or a, you know, something that you have to practice. You have to be very used to taking feedback. We try to do it in our sales classes. We try to do it in the lab when they're doing all the behavioral stuff. Hey, I'm going to ask you to do it again a different way. Not because you're a bad person, not because you're terrible at this, not because I don't like you, but because your behaviors were suboptimal and we're going to try to develop a better way to do it. And it's a special type of person who can hear that and go, oh yeah, change my behavior. Yeah. Easy. I can do that.
Absolutely. And we find that amongst, and other people can have those qualities too. Don't get me wrong. It's not just athletes, but I know athletes have that, because you didn't make it 4 years. I don't care if you were the punter on the team or you were the star running back. You took criticism from your coach. You had a coach jumping on you, telling you to do something different, and you had to perform. You had to get in the weight room. You had to make changes, and you had to swallow your pride. So, you know, I really enjoy people like that. I find people like that that come from other industries too, but it's a personality thing. You know, are you very moldable without attaching your personal worth to it.
No,
I guess is the best, you know, they, you know, I'm going to probably get sued by Zig Ziglar for saying too many of his phrases, but he's got another one. I think it's, what is it? Your attitude, not your aptitude determines your altitude.
Yep.
So I think that's very true. And I think that, you know, it plays out. And this is a long game. This is if somebody's getting into sales for the one and done big commission, and in certain industries that may be the case, but it's not in ours. If you're getting in for the one and done big commission, like I'm going to sell one big job this year and then I'm going to coast. That's not what this is about. This is the long 20-year game, or however long you work to do that. I mean, you know, I've been absolutely blessed by this job. You know, I've been able to raise 5 kids doing this and live comfortably and work for a great company with great people. So there are huge upsides to this business. And the construction business is full of great people. You see, you know, on the contractor side, architecture side too, but on the contractor side, you see guys who started as a bricklayer.
Yeah.
And now they're worth $20 million, you know,
yeah,
because they had an entrepreneurial spirit, but more important than that, they had a work ethic and they pushed themselves. They didn't say, I'm just going to go work all day, lay brick, and then we'll throw my lunchbox in the truck and do it again tomorrow. They were thinking about ways to grow that and grow themselves. So it's huge.
So if I'm a 22-year-old, I pop out of university, I have met you guys at various events here on campus, and I decide to come work for you. What does the typical day or typical week look like for me?
Right.
Yeah, I know you mentioned seven calls a day instead of 3, but I mean, walk us through kind of, you know, morning to evening. What should I be doing?
That's kind of an arbitrary number. And one thing I'll say, I'll outline the typical day, but one of the typical things in our business is it's always atypical.
Yeah.
So you'll have a customer call with a 911, you know, an architect says, I'm about to miss a deadline. I need these 5 brick samples, and you might be in Galveston. Your brick samples are in Cypress and you got to go downtown. So those type of things, be fluid while sticking to your plan as much as possible. So that's an important thing. But a typical day, you know, for an architectural rep, for example, they usually will come in the office a little bit in the morning, get caught up on emails, get things lined up for the day. They should have a plan in whatever they use. I don't care if you use an electronic planner or you use a manual book. This right here, this is my brick Bible. Everybody calls it because I always carry it around. It looks like I'm a Bible salesman or something. But you got to have it in there. And I think there's a power in writing it down. I think there's a power in sticking with what you wrote and really planning that and helping you be successful. So a typical day is, you know, they may only come in the office 2 or 3 days a week. And honestly, my philosophy is if you're in the office more than an hour or so, you're in there too long. There's no customers hanging out in our office. So you need to get out where they are and go see them. Now, occasionally they will come to the office for meetings and so forth, but typically you got to be outside. So come to the office for a very short period, gather your supplies for the day. Brick samples are heavy, you know, surprise. So, you know, you got to pick those up, get them out of our sample room, and make your run for the day. We have a service we use called Insight. It's part of Construct Connect. It's an online clearinghouse for all upcoming projects, and it's really good. And all of our reps rely on that very heavily because you can look at your book of business. So all the architecture firms in Houston are assigned to a rep. And so they can go in Construct Connect, and it's not a true CRM system, but they can pull out all the projects that are going on and make a little one line note about each project you see, because you know I'm going to, you know, BLK Architects today, so I've got a whole list a project that VLK is working on, and I'm going to make it my business to find out something about all those projects while I'm in the office. Even if they say, we're not ready for anything yet, but thanks for asking. Or if they say, hey, bring us a full suite of products. So they'll do that little prep work. Preparation is important. You know, you can't just grab a stack of brochures and head out the door. You got to have direction, right? So they'll typically go, and calling on architects is funny. You have to get to know the firms, because some architects don't come in the office till 10 o'clock in the morning, but they might work till 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So you've got to know, when is this firm at the prime spot? So typically you make calls in the morning. You know, you're in the office early, get yourself lined out, make calls till about 11:30. Then typically we try not to call between 11:30 and 12:30, maybe one, because most architects are taking lunch or they're out to lunch or they have some lunch meeting or something. So from that time, you get to regroup. We're very mobile on everything. We got email on our phones. Everybody's got laptops. You know, go find a Starbucks, sit in your truck on your Wi-Fi, and reassess what you're going to do in the afternoon. Then about at 1 o'clock, you know, my philosophy was, and I tell my team, you know, 1 o'clock, you need to be at the door of your next appointment. So you start at 1 o'clock and you can go to about 4 o'clock. Because if you show up after 4 o'clock and you get in a good conversation with somebody, they may be trying to get out at five. You may not finish that conversation, and then you've lost a good opportunity that you could have gotten if you showed up at four or three. So that's kind of a typical day. And, you know, we'll have trainings, and the contractor reps do a similar thing. Contractor reps will assess the projects they're working on with that contractor. They'll look at the plant schedules. They'll make sure that their brick is getting made. And then they'll go make their rounds to all these contractors. They might go by a job site, check on the job site. We do a lot of job site work, so our guys have to be comfortable on a construction site. You know, a guy named Bill Lamond, who hired me at Acme Brick, he told me, always go to the job site. Now, I didn't really understand. I was young. I didn't really know. And I said, well, why do you go to the job site? He said, you'll know when you get there. So every time, it's very accurate. You'll go, you may see something strange. You might see someone else's product where you thought your product was going to be. And you can sort of take action and see what needs to be done. You might see something being done incorrectly. You can, you know, make calls to the right people. You don't want to jump up on the wall and tell the guys to stop, but you can make calls to the right person, make them aware. And it builds that relationship of trust with your customer. And they go, man, he took the time to go out there and he saw this guy was doing something incorrectly and he called me about it. You know, they appreciate that. So, you know, that's kind of a typical day too for a contractor rep.
So a lot of in-person visits. Are you guys doing any work really over the phone in terms of setting these meetings, or it's better to show up?
We do phone work. So as a rep, you'll be on the phone a lot, but those phone calls are based on relationships that you've established. So if somebody already feels comfortable with you, and you've met them in person, you've worked with them on a couple of projects, then they're going to call you. They're going to say, hey, I need this, David, bring me that. Or, you know, what are your ideas for this problem that I need a solution for? So we do field a lot of phone calls. The contractor reps get a lot of phone calls. Where's my brick? You know, we on a good day, just into the Houston territory, we ship about 500,000 brick a day. And on top of that, we ship other products too. So, you know, our trucking infrastructure is enormous. The contractor reps have to really be able to tap into that to get their customer the right answer. If you say my brick's showing up today, doesn't show up till tomorrow, that can rub some people the wrong way. We've got to avoid that as much as possible. So, you know, that's really.
So after the relationship exists, then it can default back to the phone, but it's not used for kind of establishing the relationships.
Right. And one thing to continue on that same vein, I found over the years that even if someone has a good relationship with you and they're calling you about things, if you show up in person and they take the time to sit down with you for 5 minutes, they're going to tell you things that they're not going to send you in an email.
Yeah.
They're not going to talk to you about on the phone. So they're going to say, well, we got this new project. I can't really talk about it yet, but come back in 2 weeks and I'll tell you all about it. Or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So that will just inevitably happen during my career as a rep. And I try to transfer that thought process to my reps now on my team, because you got to keep those touch points.
Yeah.
People, you know, even though COVID was very difficult on outside salespeople, obviously, but people got used to not seeing other people. And I think some newer reps got used to doing everything remotely in their pajamas at their house. Now, there might be certain industries where you can do that. Okay. And there might be companies that prescribe that and want that to be the way they're handled. But for us in our business, it's still a face-to-face interaction. If you want to be the best.
Yeah. I mean, maybe back to the issue of effectiveness and efficiency, right? Like, yeah, it costs less to just get on the phone. Well, yeah. If it doesn't work, who cares? Just shutter up the door, you know, just go home at that point if it's not going to work. Right. Good.
You can't put your finger on that. So you can't really quantify that. So You can't say by showing up in person, I found out all this extra stuff, because it may be some offhand comment. As a sales rep, you need to be really good at reading upside down. You know, probably everybody's heard that. So you're across the desk from somebody. They may bring you in for a meeting. You may see a proposal on their desk or a big set of drawings on their desk for a project you've never heard of. And even if they don't want to talk to you about it yet, you can make a mental note. Next time you go back, you go, well, what about that U of H football stadium? I heard you guys are working on that. Well, really, I just saw it on your desk last time I was there.
Yeah.
Little things like that.
Yeah, it's an intelligence gathering. So
absolutely, it's a big part of it. And you know, as a manager, and I think, you know, if your students are in a track to become a technical seller, they're going to eventually want to become a manager of a team. And I think as a manager of a team, and I've taken this philosophy, it's very important to remove obstacles to success for your team. Mm. So, for example, when I started at Acme in 2003. Reps had to do their own quotes. They had to do a lot of their own paperwork. It was death by forms. You know, if you wanted something special, you had to sit there and scrawl out by hand or on your computer 5 or 6 different forms to get something done. So, you know, now we've adopted a philosophy of if sales reps are not sales reps because they're really good at managing paperwork and filing things the right way, all that. So take that out of their hands. Get an assistant that can help them do that, where they can just convey the information and they can get back out in the world talking to customers. So I think that's a big thing too. I think a lot of companies miss out on that, because I think they do have a lot of forms that you have to fill out. Maybe they've got a cumbersome CRM system that's taken all the reps' time. Well, every minute you take from a rep, in theory, is a minute you're taking out of having them in front of a customer.
For sure. Well, I've got a couple of questions that I like to ask near the end of these conversations. Maybe we'll try to squeeze one or two of these in. The first one that's on my mind is there anything that you can think of that people get wrong or misunderstand about technical sales?
I think, and I'm speaking for my company, I think they get wrong that you have to be an engineer level expert to do this. You have to have a very analytical mind, where, you know, you can hammer out calculus equations in your sleep or something like that. You don't have to. It's memorization.
Hmm.
And I've been pretty convinced that everybody can do that. And if you've got a robust backup team, so you've got real engineers behind you, you've got real technical experts that are sitting at the desk all the time, crunching numbers and coming up with new products and solving solutions for you. You don't really have to do that. You don't have to be that. So you can focus more on the relationship building side and on the, you know, solutions providing, I guess. So I think, you know, technical sales, sometimes they think, I've had reps come to me. I have a great rep right now, and she was a flight attendant before she came. And she said, well, I'm not sure I can do this because I don't know anything about construction. And I said, well, you know, are you going to be hardworking? I saw that. She's very hardworking. I said, can you check your ego at the door and do what I tell you till you learn it? And she said, yes. And she's done a phenomenal job. She's one of our top salespeople. And she didn't have any technical background.
So yeah.
I think that's a misconception. You can do technical sales as long as you have the work ethic, I'm convinced.
Perfect. Then I think the last one on my mind is, are there any common sales practices, advice that people give to salespeople, especially early career salespeople, that you just think is wrong, that you disagree with, that you'd like to correct?
I see different types of sales. So I can say that some companies have a sink or swim mentality with new reps. And they see new reps as sort of just cannon fodder for the business. And if you're not reaching a certain plateau of sales after the 3-week introductory course I gave you, then you're out.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that pressure selling is fine, but I think you have to give them the tools first. So I think that some companies just rifle through new grads. So new grads have to be very savvy about the company that you're going to work for. Don't just look at what they're offering you as a guarantee. Okay. Look at the company, research the company, talk to reps from the company, and don't say, you know, I don't want to name the company, but, you know, I know like my daughter's in sales. She's graduated college. She's been doing that about a year. And the first place she went was, and she's still there, she's doing great, but their philosophy was this cannon fodder mentality. They put people through a 3-week boot camp. And at the end of boot camp, if you don't have, and then they want you to sell, and it's over the phone. So they want you to sell without really developing any tools. And some people will swim and be very successful. It's got a huge attrition rate for those after that 3-week boot camp. I mean, probably 25% of the new associates stick around, and that gets expensive as a company. I don't understand how they do that, but or why they do that. But I think they feel like they're just seeing a lot of faces, and they're going to get some winners out of it. But I think that's an approach. That's not necessarily things they tell kids, but they say, "Hey, you need to." I would tell new grads, hey, you really need to know about the company. You need to talk to something other than, like, you know, your best friend who kind of knows somebody. You need to talk to those reps that work for that company. And if you reach out, most reps are people. So yeah. They're ready to answer your questions.
Perfect. Yeah. This, I think one of the thought processes driving that is, you know, some of these companies haven't realized that at some point you do run out of potential employees. They say, oh, we don't see any downside. We don't see any, it's not hurting us in the short term. You know, we've been doing it for, you know, several years. And but if you start to add all of these things up, if you start to look at it over the long range, you really, you know, why do people think that salespeople in this whole industry are terrible and they hate our guts? Well, because you keep churning through people and you end up with 75% of your sales force not knowing what they're doing and scared that they're not going to make a commission, and they start doing weird stuff that maybe you didn't even tell them to do it and you don't approve of it. And yet you've created the system in which, you know, a rational person looks at it and goes, oh, I better misrepresent some facts here because, you know, I don't want to miss out on a paycheck this week, right? I better make some exaggerations. I better, you know, try to guilt trip somebody into saying yes because everybody's told me no all week. And yeah, that comes at a cost. It's just too far downstream for most people to perceive it, I think.
Absolutely. It comes at a cost to the company. It comes at a cost to the person. So, you know, as a company that, you know, we're big corporations, we're part of Berkshire Hathaway, we're a big company. But, you know, I think at the heart, you have to see, do they care about people? You know, do I want to take a new grad and whip them around for 3 or 4 weeks and then spit them back out? I don't want to do that. You know, it's a waste of my time. It's not good for them. And, you know, if we have to onboard 80 people to get 10, that's not a great equation either. So, and eventually, like you said, you will run out of people. People will stop coming to your company. It will develop a reputation as that. And, you know, I don't think that takes too long to develop that. So I think that's one thing I see in other companies that I don't like.
Absolutely. Well, I see the clock's drawing near to our end time. Very appreciative of you joining us today. Very appreciative of your thoughts and what you shared with us. And yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Willie. I appreciate it and appreciate the time. And it was an interesting conversation.
That's it for this interview. I hope you got something valuable out of it. Of course, if you did, be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast on whatever app you use to listen. Also, share this with your colleagues and friends, and let's continue to have a deeper discussion on all things related to selling and sales leadership. See you next time in the Sales Lab.